Everybody in real estate says the classic, my market is different. And there are some big differences we know between markets around Australia. And there are big differences between, say, city markets and regional markets. And I think the market in which Lux Listing Sydney is set is probably the eastern suburbs of Sydney, which is like a different planet compared to like everywhere else.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes supplier news, developments, exclusive interviews, technology, and more to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast, visit joineliteagent.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome, everyone, to a special episode of the Elevate podcast. I'm Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. And today, for a few very special episodes of the show, which I am super looking forward to, I'm joined by the one and only legend from Wagga, Dave Scow.
G'day. Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me.
It's awesome to have you. So many of you know Dave. He's an industry trainer. He's been on our cover. He's appeared in lots of Elite Agent stuff over the years, like Every Agent Has a Story, and he's been a Transform coach and more. But to tell you the truth, Dave and I really bonded over our mutual love of reality television, didn't we?
Correct. Absolutely.
In particular, Survivor.
Yeah, we're both absolute Survivor tragics.
And you've raised all that money for Luke Tokyo, which was incredible.
Yeah, that's my claim to fame now forever. I can be as good a real estate practitioner and trainer in the world, but I will never do anything better than that GoFundMe campaign for Luke. Yeah, I'll hang my head on that.
Yeah, very, very well deserved. And, of course, we're not really here to talk about Survivor. We're here to talk about another reality television show, which is Lux Listing Sydney. So you're a big fan of the show, yeah?
Huge fan. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those abilities to be the voyeur in these people that, as industry practitioners, we know from the articles that we read in the Lead Agent and the videos that we see online. So it's nice to get a little behind-the-scenes glimpse.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we did some written recapping of season one with Nikki Horner from Canberra at the helm. And you and I have talked and we thought we'd take it up a notch this year and create a series of podcast episodes. But we're not just going to recap the show, are we? We're going to actually talk about some of the great lessons and things like that that we can pick up from the top agents because they are the top of their field for a reason, yeah?
Correct. Yeah, and that's exactly right. I think it's more than just an entertainment piece. It's really an opportunity to maybe take a bit of learning from this too, because we're not all agents in the marketplaces that these people that are showcased on Lux Listings are in, but there's definitely some continuity and some practices that translate into any marketplace, and we're going to really look at those things.
Yeah, it's and we're going to have a bit of fun because, let's face it, watching Lux Listings and calling it works just like eating chocolate and calling it a diet. Correct. So everybody in real estate says the classic, like, my market is different. And there are some big differences we know between markets around Australia, and there are big differences between, say, city markets and regional markets. And I think, you know, the market in which Lux Listing Sydney is set is probably the eastern suburbs of Sydney, which is like a different planet compared to like everywhere else. You've worked in regional markets and city markets. What do you say to that statement that my market is different?
Correct. I mean, every market is going to be different. But again, there's always at the crux of any real estate transaction, be it a sale or a listing or a property under management, whether it's in the eastern suburbs or at the back of Broken Hill, there's always that common theme of client experience first and putting the client's needs ahead of anything else in that transaction. And I think the guys in Lux Listings do a really good job of showcasing that on the show. And I think the agent at the back of Broken Hill is going to be able to do that in their day-to-day business as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the angle we're going at, I think, you know, for parts of this, apart from obviously the educational angle, is, you know, like I was thinking about this my market's different thing. And I remember from back in the 90s, which you might be too young for, there was this column in a magazine in the UK called Would They Wear It in Wigan, which is a nice bit of alliteration there. But basically in the 90s, there was a whole bunch of runway fashion that was like, you know, exposed breasts and tin foil jackets and big voluminous skirts and things like that, which were probably like a bit much for the straight talking, you know, brisk weather wearing women of Wigan. And that column got really, really, really popular. And what happened then was New Woman in Australia picked it up, but they picked it up with the title, Would They Wear It in Wagga? And, you know, like often they would come up with these weird and wonderful things on the runway. And I feel like, you know, some of the things that we see in Lux listings and what we see in Lux listing Sydney, you know, like, would they do it in Wagga? And, well, happy coincidence, you are from Wagga.
Correct. Wagga represent. Look, I'm really happy about that. It is a happy coincidence. Look, I think that's exactly right. I think taking a view of what these guys do on the show and being able to translate it into how this would work throughout the different markets, whether it's regional or coastal or rural or in the metro areas or in the high-end areas of the capitals of Melbourne or even Canberra now, is a really quite a lucrative marketplace with some really beautiful high-end homes and people with big high net disposable wealth. So I think being able to translate it across the spectrum is a really good opportunity for us.
Yeah, amazing. And now to kick off, so Lux Listings Season 2, Episode 1, well, Episodes 1, 2 and 3 premiere on April the 1st. So we're going to take a journey back in time to Series 1, and we're going to recap Series 1, and then we're going to bring you all the action from all of the episodes of Season 2. And before we kick off, I'd just like to thank our series sponsor, Issue.com, who are an all-in-one platform to create and distribute beautiful digital content from your listings to your marketing materials, to your brochures, your portfolios and more. It's also where you'll find a lot of Elite Agent back issues. So you can check them out at issue.com/Elite Agent Mag. There's a special offer. Readers, listeners of Elite Agent Elevate can get started with Issue today for free if you sign up for an annual account to get 50% off. That's issue.com, issuu.com/Elevate. And use the promo code ELITE at the checkout for your free account or 50% off your annual premium account. And it's a fantastic service, so go check it out. Now, Dave, back to Season 1. It had everything from sperm freezing to Miss Australia to birds flying into beamers, Tibetans singing bowls, castles, embassies, fast car and lots of luxury, and there was even some property.
How about that?
So let's get into Episode 1.
Beautiful. Let's do it. I think Episode 1 really sets the scene very well at the leading three personalities that we're going to follow throughout the series of Lux listings. And although the three personalities are vastly different and the way that they operate are very different, and even their outlook on how real estate should be done is quite different, there are some very, very key traits that all of them possess. Some of my favourite bits in that first episode, and we kick off with the Rubenstein Group celebrating their first birthday. Gavin comes out full of bravado, talking about how he eats risk for breakfast, and then gives us a running commentary on all of the things that make him amazingly successful, and he is amazingly successful at what he does. And then, as you said, fancy that, we actually get that first glimpse of the property porn side of what Lux Listings is all about, with the property in Dover Heights, the property that's going to auction. He introduces the show to Simon there, where we meet Simon, the buyer's agent, at a sneak peek, I suppose, before what looks like before the open house inspection, so that Simon can assess it for his client's needs. And at this point, I think we see that juxtaposition between the role of buyer's agent and the role of selling agent, but also the real sense of camaraderie and friendship that obviously these two guys that have known each other for a long time really foster. And that's a nice point in that episode as well. That brings us then to our third star of the series, which is obviously Delene Lewis from Lang & Sims Double Bay. And Delene is there looking to hire a new assistant. She's at some glitzy, glamorous place down near Circular Quay, meeting up with Daniela for the first time. And we see Daniela feature throughout the series quite a bit. And ultimately, we'll talk about her sort of as the series comes to a close. What were some of your takeaways from this first episode, Sam?
Yeah, I think I'll never forget the statement, I eat risk for breakfast. You know, I'd like to say I spread it on my toast, but I kind of don't. Too many carbs for a Luxister. And the other one, I think, you know, Simon, I think we were introduced to, you know, like, as you say, the difference between a buyer's agent and a seller's agent, because, you know, you see Simon walk in and it's classic buyer's agent, you know, like, and I think Nikki called it sort of the, like the duck waddle, like, you know, this is bad, that's bad, that's not good, that's too ordinary, this is, you know, like, so, and then his classic line, which was something like, if it's any higher, we're not the buyer. You know, I think basically every buyer's agent in Australia picked up their pen and wrote that one down. Yeah. And it's probably been used a million times since. But, oh, look, there was so much in that episode to love. I think Amazon really, really, you know, they opened the series with a bang. I love the dinner at Simon's house. And I think, you know, one of the MVPs of this season and hopefully next season is Simon's mum, Jen. Yeah, she was just such a lovable mum. And, love that. And even, you know, Simon Schwitzing over the, you know, like her wanting to find him a girlfriend or a wife or something like that. So, I loved all of that. And then obviously we ended with that crescendo of the cruise where, you know, there was a bit of non-scripted, of course, conflict between the three of them. But, what a great way to open and showcase Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely. And then leaving us on that big cliffhanger, and Amazon have done this really well where from episode to episode they've really left us on the cliffhanger and we're at the auction of this place in Dover Heights. Things are really heating up. Corley's doing a great job on the gavel, obviously. And then like that, the episode's over. And, which brings us into episode two.
That's it. You can tell it's Damien Cooley by the tie, yeah?
Correct, 100%.
It's picked out like a Rosella in a land full of, you know, like sulfur crested cockies. But anyway, so Dover Heights. So we come into the next episode, which is episode two. And I think the classic line from that one is that it's classic auction. There are a lot of people sort of sitting around sort of tight-lipped, you know, trying not to look at each other. It looks a bit like a scene from The Bold and the Beautiful to me, where everyone's kind of like, yeah, and sniffing the air and doing all those ones until Gavin says in one of his diary moments, I work the auction floor like a stripper at a bucks party. And I thought that's classic Gavin. And only he, I think, because, you know, like we've interviewed Gavin a lot of times, I've got a lot of time for Gavin, only he could get away with that line, I think.
Agreed.
And then there was a bit of a moment in that episode which I didn't love, and that was the bit where, you know, do you remember the two girls were bidding and then there was that snide guy at the side sort of saying, what is daddy going to buy you a house or something like that, not believing that they had the money. I think, you know, like the advice I'd give agents out there is don't judge a book by its cover. Yeah. You just never know. Like there's so many tech billionaires that sort of walk around in, you know, like black polo necks and scruffy jeans that you just don't know who's got the money these days. And I thought it was a bit of a chauvinist comment to make. What about you?
Yeah, correct. And I think Corley did really well at bringing that back in. And I mean, it's hard to say how much of that was scripted and how much was actually real life, but these things happen in real life and we see them. Tom Penos will show you almost every weekend that he's got his iPhone out at his auctions, that there's always a heckler and he deals with them really well and very directly. And I think any consummate auctioneer has the ability to be able to diffuse those situations quite quickly. Yeah, that old bloke was a bit of a pig, but I think that it is representative of what does happen in real life, whether it was scripted for this episode or not. Things like that do happen. Things get out of control.
Yeah. And then I think the moment that we, we introduced Delene as our queen, like, and, you know, obviously Queen and Delene as rhymes. Yeah. You know, was that moment that she was talking to Janet, who was the vendor at Blair Athol. And again, like this was just a beautiful example of really looking after your vendor, being transparent, taking into account, you know, that the vendor didn't really want to see the house knocked down. And Delene took all of that on board and ended up coming back. Well, she sat down and had tea and did all the things. And, you know, I just thought that was a really lovely way to meet your vendor or your customer where they're at. Yeah. And, you know, and in the end she got the listing and brought in a beautiful buyer. So that was like, that was a really good moment for me in that episode.
Yeah. And that really was a masterclass in building rapport and empathy with the clients. And matching them on their level, as you said. And I mean, in the previous episode, we saw Deline absolutely hold her own in the argy-bargy on the boat with Gavin and the TRG group of blokes. And obviously before in that episode, she'd sort of described herself as, or people had described her previously as the Rottweiler in heels. I really like that comment. And she sort of countered that with saying that she certainly wasn't a pooch. I think that's a really nice way to see how Deline operates in terms of being able to tough it out with the boys as needed, but also be that really soft, gentle, sweet, trusted agent and advocate for the vendor when she needs to be. She did, that was a stroke of brilliance.
Yeah, I think, you know, she's definitely a masterclass in, you know, she knew she wasn't going to win, where she just handled herself really well, picked herself back up again and kept moving forward, which I thought was really, really good.
Yeah, agreed.
So on to episode 3. Give me your highlights from episode 3.
Look, I think that the Bondi apartment was probably my favourite bit of this episode. From the real estate point of view, where Gavin and his team sourced out the opportunity, first of all, by scoping out this overpriced listing that had been on the market for a long period of time that was obviously overpriced, and perhaps there was some dud advice that was given by the previous listing agent, who knows, all the way through to the point where Gavin meets the vendor, builds trust, is very, very blunt and honest with the price opinion and what it was going to take to be able to get that sold. And even then, he thought that the listing price was pretty lofty from a price per square meter perspective. And then through to the open house of the year, which had the best vista that Sydney has to offer, right on the sand of Bondi Beach, with live music and expensive champagne flowing, old blokes in budgie smugglers, which was probably the low light of the episode. The lady who probably wasn't a giant, but next to Gavin looked like an absolute behemoth of a woman, whose YSLs wouldn't fit on the stairs as she was going down. I loved it. I loved the Bondi apartment. I thought that, look, even though it seems small, I could definitely see myself perched up there. That's the kind of place that would be worthwhile coming back to Sydney for. And I probably wouldn't come back to Sydney for much. The traffic would do my absolute head in. But if it was for that, I'd probably be back there.
Yeah, well, that's it. I guess it doesn't matter if you're in a small apartment when you're that close to the beach and you can sort of, you know, like you're 5 minutes from the outdoors. And it was still Gavin's kind of listing, even though it wasn't like the big sprawling, you know, cliff house or whatever it was. Gavin sort of seems to be able to pick up these interesting places and then markets the absolute bejesus out of them. So, you know, like who would come up with, you know, and I reckon that guy in the budgies was one of Gavin's mates. or it could have been one of Kyle Sandilands' mates, who knows. But you know, thinking about the Aussie burgers and the champagne and like everything is like five star amazing. Like the open home itself is an event. And well, you can tell that was done sort of pre-COVID and stuff like that. But, you know, like I do hope that we can sort of get back to showcasing. I mean, maybe you wouldn't do that in Wagga. That's one of the things that you wouldn't do in Wagga. But
you don't have a view like that in Wagga. That's the only problem. We're missing the view.
Yep. But it's very cool the way that Gavin actually looks at open homes in the most great detail. Like I can remember asking him once, you know, what is your point of difference? And he just said one word, detail. Like, and you can see that down to the nth degree, it was all super, super, super planned. Yeah.
Yeah. And even him coming in, I can't remember if it was at this episode, it might've been another open that he was preparing for, but some of the things that he picked up that he wasn't quite happy with before the video shoot or before the open house, and the assistant was scurrying around behind him fixing them. They were minute details, but they were absolute details. And for him, that makes all the difference. And yeah, that is what sets him apart.
Yeah, absolutely. So this episode was also, Simon went on a date with Miss Universe Australia, I think, and it was sort of kind of a bit of a hilarious episode because he was late for the date because he had to step over some man in the street doing something unspeakable. And then as they were talking, he was taking phone calls from people and then she was sort of talking to the waiter about being a vegan and then he orders a medium rare steak, which I didn't think was probably the best move.
He also, you know, didn't care, like he couldn't give a shit.
I just reckon Jen might have said, Simon, you're never gonna get a female doing that sort of stuff. But I also think, like, you know, I think that's where Nikki and I sort of talked about the episode, and it's like, Simon for Bachelor 2022. Like, you know, I just think he's a shoo-in. And I can just imagine, you know, like a rose ceremony with, you know, like Osha and Simon, you know, at the end of it, and, you know, like, ladies, you did not get a rose from Simon, like, you know, and, but, you know, like, I've got this whole narrative in my head of, you know, home visits with Jen and everyone spitzing at the table and, you know, cuddling puppies and, you know, and Simon on the phone and all the rest of it. So, you know, like, if Channel 10 are listening, you know, like, I think Simon's your guy next year.
Yeah, I think he is. And look, I think that there's much more than just Jen too. I mean, I think that the potential bachelorettes would have to go through and meet the whole Cohen Handler team. He obviously spends more time there than he does anywhere else. The tricky part is going to be finding a bachelorette that is happy with playing second fiddle to CH, I suppose. He lives and breathes his work. And again, that's the cornerstone to his success, and he's wildly successful. He's no doubt the best buyer's agency or best buyer's agency in the country, and that doesn't come by doing things in halves. So good on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also liked in this episode, one other thing that just before we move on to episode four, was the showcasing of Delene in that really vulnerable spot where earlier in the episode we'd seen her meet with Tom, a client of hers. She had a listing. It wasn't selling. She had it open again. No buyers came through. And it's, as an agent, something that we can all relate to. We've all had listings that just for love nor money will not bloody sell. And this place looked like it was fairly niche. It had a few quirks that weren't going to suit everyone. It wasn't an easy job to sell. The vendor was very set on price and wouldn't be told otherwise. And it was sort of building up to, oh, shit, I think Delene's going to lose this one. And ultimately, when she's having that family time, which she talks about valuing really highly in the episode, she gets the call from Tom, still takes the time to take the call, even though she's in the middle of family time and her dad's birthday. And I think that's just a really class act, the way that she handled that whole scenario. She showed a lot of resilience, first of all, which is obviously a key characteristic in any successful real estate agent's toolkit. But she was very humble in the way that went. There was certainly no burning of bridges. I think a lot of up-and-coming agents can take a lot from that in the way that she conducted herself there.
Yeah, I think so too, because, you know, like, you can either keep sort of, you know, knocking yourself out, you know, on a no-win situation, or you can sort of move on because, you know, like, you know, maybe it's just something that's not clicking between agent and vendor, and, you know, for every vendor there is an agent. It just might not be you.
Correct, absolutely. Another thing that I really liked about the whole series was just how open the three main characters were with access to their families. The fact that we were in Delene's house with her parents and her sister and the two girls, the fact that we were in Simon's house for Shabbat with his mum and dad and obviously Liam and Tammy as well. And then later on we'll talk about it in a tick because I think it's the next episode where we get to meet Gav's dad and he takes the time to go with him. It's big of them, I think. I think that they've got such high-profile public lives as elite agents that they certainly don't need to invite the cameras into their homes. And the fact that they have, I think, has really added to the authenticity of the whole series. So good on them for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So episode four, if you don't like rejection, get out of real estate. I feel like every coach has sort of, you know, said that at one point or another. Yeah. So this is where a few things happened. Well, first of all, Jen got a puppy, which was, you know, like, who doesn't love a puppy?
Absolutely no hate off Simon bearing grandchildren. I think it was a really dud move for Simon to think that was going to have any impact. Jen is still desperate for the grandchildren, but it made no difference.
I reckon she is too. Simon was forced to cross the bridge to Mossman because, you know, like, obviously the Lux listings in Sydney aren't all about the east side. Some of them
are. How dreadful having to go over to the north. Jeez.
I know, right? There's a rumour, Dave, that the north side is going to be featured a bit more in season two. So there's going to be a bit more traversing of the Harbour Bridge, as I understand. So we're leading up to the crescendo here. Obviously, we're over the hump in season three, and then we're leading up to the crescendo where, you know, Gavin and Shani have a bit of a fallout over a broken mouse. And that sort of leads up to, you know, sort of an interesting scenario. But I think, you know, this is, and you see it a lot in real estate businesses, is people working with friends and family. Do you have any advice on that?
Look, think very long and hard about it. I've employed friends previously who were probably employed because they were a friend and not because they may have been the best person for the job. And it doesn't always work well. I think in this case with Shani and Gavin, it's quite obvious that friendship comes before that employer-employee relationship. And because of the way that Gavin operates at such a tempo and such a driven, focused way of doing things, he just needs this shit done. And because Shani and he are friends, Shani thinks, well, this is really trivial stuff. Plug your own frigging mouse in. He needs someone that will plug the mouse in for him without the back chat. And perhaps Shani's not the right person for it. I don't know. She seems lovely. I really liked her on the show. I think she would bring a lot of value into that business, but maybe not that business. Maybe someone else's real estate business that she's not childhood friends with. Yeah, I think it's tainted with danger.
Yeah, I do think, you know, because we had the whole of TRG on the cover in 2020, I think, actually, now that I think about it. And I interviewed all of them, or all of them at that time, because obviously the team has grown substantially since then. And they're all very driven people. Like, you know, like it's very obvious to me that Gavin recruits for a certain culture. And I think it's fine to sort of, you know, bring someone in at the bottom, but then, you know, make sure that there is a path up for them, you know, when they're ready, because I don't think Gavin, you know, sort of recruits people that, you know, are happy to just plod along and stay where they are. Yeah. And, you know, even Shani, she's a qualified lawyer, I think, you know, so yeah, she's, you know, obviously probably has ambitions of her own as well. So be interesting to see where she goes in season two.
Yeah, if she's got much of a role to play in season two. And speaking about support staff in season two, someone who I'm surprised we haven't talked about up until now is probably the real star of the show, in my opinion. I love him. Is young Liam, Simon's offsider Liam, because he's an absolute card. He's hilarious. He is so naive and dumb's not the right word, but he's just such a boy, such a young boy learning the ropes. But you can't help but love him because he's freaking hilarious. He's a funny addition. I love him. He's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, now that you mentioned it, poor old Liam got locked in the car and we came up with that hashtag Free Liam at the same time that, you know, Free Britney was pissed. Yep. I think they were just going to an open house and poor old Liam got, you know, got sidelined. But, you know, like I thought he was a really good sidekick for Simon in terms of, you know, getting him his juices. And, well, he even, I mean, look, he was the one that was responsible for that fabulous party in episode six. You know, that's an amazing talent. And then I think even in episode five, you know, like he showed that he was like truly Simon's, you know, like a chip off the old block almost when he sort of started, you know, doing the waddle around the house going, you know, no, this needs fixing. That's ordinary. That's, you know, it's like a proud moment. But speaking of Simon's offsiders, one of my favourites in the show is actually Tammy. She's got the softness when she needs to be soft and she's got the sass when she needs to be sassy. And in the very beginning, you know, way back in season two, she gave Simon a bit of heat when, you know, like she said, well, this is a kitchen, Simon. Some people cook in it, you know, which I thought was like, boom, well done. Yeah. But, you know, like obviously there would have been a lot of people in the industry that would recognise Tammy's talents from watching the show, including our Queen Delene, who tried to recruit Tammy in episode four. Now, that actually goes on a lot in the real estate industry, doesn't it? That's pretty normal.
Yeah, 100%, because good talent is hard to find. And if you can find someone that has those, and it's not the skill stuff you can teach, the technical stuff you can learn on the job. It's the attitude and the tenacity and the resilience and all of these buzzwords that make a good real estate practitioner, whether that be a sales agent in their own right or a sales associate or an offside or an administrator. Good talent is hard to find. So there's a lot. I mean, It's probably the same in a lot of industries, but it would be not real estate if there wasn't someone moving from one agency to another in certain marketplaces constantly.
Yeah, it's something we find a lot in, you know, in Elite Agent. We'll get a press release saying, oh, so-and-so started at such and such a place. But then, you know, like for the uninitiated, it's always, all right, well, where did they come from? There's always an opposite side to this story. Or, you know, when one office closes under one brand, it opens up under another. And, you know, like, yeah, sometimes you just got to read between the lines a bit, you know, in the industry in that way.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing I like about this episode is the introduction of Michael Paglia. Michael Paglia is a really renowned agent in the eastern suburbs who's been around for a long, long time, working for the Sotheby's brand or operating the Sotheby's brand in the eastern suburbs now. He is the MVP of this episode. And Simon himself says in the episode, Michael Paglia is one of the nicest people that you'll ever meet in real estate. And that really rings true through this episode. He's featured again in another episode where we see the castle, which we'll talk about in a tick. And I think that if he wasn't such the dorky dad, he'd probably be a front runner to be one of the main players in something like Lux Listings. But he's just such the dorky dad. Like he's dad jokes galore, and he's just a bit of a nervous man. Anyway, I love him. I think he's fantastic. And the results that he has achieved throughout his career speak absolute volumes. But, yeah, I'm really happy that we saw someone like Michael Paglia showcased in a couple of the episodes in this season.
He is gorgeous. And we interviewed him just after season one finished airing. And I can remember, you know, I mentioned Lux Listings and he said, oh, yeah, some people recognised me walking down the street. Yeah. And you know, he seemed quite surprised about it, like that people, you know, like you're in that show and he, I was in that show. Like, you know, like and seemed genuinely surprised about it, which was kind of lovely. So, and this episode then ends on Gavin selling the Bondi apartment for a record. For $3 million. So I think, you know, I think that's the results to sort of back up those claims that, you know, that he made and all the scripts and dialogues. So, you know, I think that proves that you can use the scripts and dialogues so long as you can back it up with the result and the chops to actually execute.
100% right. And the other thing that we see in this episode at the end is that it leaves us on another auction cliffhanger with Michael Paglia's Seaview House or Harbourview House, which Simon's got a buyer at, and a little bit unorthodox in having the buyer there at the auction with him. I don't think that that's something that would usually happen in a buyer's agency situation. I think he mentions in the episode that it is a little unusual. The buyer is nervous. God, she's nervous throughout that whole auction, and she's talking to Simon. I'm thinking, just shut up, don't say anything, just let him do his thing, trust that he's got his thing. Yeah, that's right. But there was absolutely ferocious competition, and their pre-auction offer of $13 million, Paglia was talking about it being somewhere in the range of $15 or $16 million, and absolutely blown out of the water and sells in excess of $24 million. And there were just some bidders there that just didn't want to miss out. And I think it was a real masterstroke from the eventual buyer, the Asian lady who ended up being the buyer, came in very late and she just picked everyone at the post and she obviously had the cash and didn't want to miss out. So good luck to them.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was a bit like running the Melbourne Cup, that auction, because, you know, again, it started slow and it's sort of like the Melbourne Cup race where it's like all the horses are sort of bunched in together and then all of a sudden, you know, like somebody comes from nowhere and like you've all done your tickets. But I think the MVP, before we leave that one and sort of go on to episode five, is the MVP of that episode was Simon's eyebrows. because he proved, like in that auction, not only did he have like nerves of steel, but you know, like he had all of the looks, and you know, like yeah, he was just reading the room, like
everyone. That's right. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. All right, episode five.
Beautiful. I think that's from a practical point of view, that whole judging a book by its cover again comes back up in this episode, because the buyer Sue, they're talking about if some idiot wants to overpay for it, then I'm happy to miss out. She desperately wanted that house and she was disappointed that she didn't get it. But I think that she had real resolve to see that it just wasn't hers for the taking in the end. The other thing that we see here is the Shanee and Gav situation escalating, not escalating, but coming to a point where it's probably a little bristly. And towards the end of the episode, they then have the chat. Can we go for the chat down on the beach at Avalon, which was a nice scene for it, but it was a bit awkward. I don't know. And I don't think she really agreed with the things that he was saying either. And again, my favourite, Liam, comes really into his own here. And it's the battle of the assistants with Delene's assistant, Daniela, and Simon's assistant, Liam, sort of cutting their teeth, if you like, under the watchful eye of their mentors, giving themselves a bit of a run for their money, I suppose, in a bit of a mock situation where Danielle is probably doing a little too much to sell the property and she's a little flouncy.
I think the magical trees was the thing that got me, because you could almost see Delene going like
and then Liam, as you said before, duck waddling his way through, absolutely pulling the place to shreds, and finally just saying, yeah, look, it's a knockdown. Into his mouth. That's something that Simon would have said, and probably an absolute moment of pride for Simon, I would think, that that Liam had actually cottoned on to that completely. The other thing I liked in this episode was the new buyer that we met, Simon's new buyer, Tamara, with the thick Eastern European accent. Yeah, look, she was crazy. She was a nut job. How did you find Tamara?
Oh, Tamara, she was the one that there wasn't enough gold or something, and she was just going grey, drab, drab, yeah, like, you know, and I think Claudia Michaels from McGrath over on the North Shore guested in that one, and she was in this beautiful red dress, and I think, you know, like, I think that that buyer, I think she liked Claudia's dress more than she liked the house.
But the buyer, like, she was so off on a tangent on everything that it was a real mismatch, I think. And the fact that she couldn't find the front door and she was yelling out like a lunatic down on the harbour out to Simon to try and find where he was, I thought she was crazy. We see her in the next episode and I actually warmed to her a bit more, but yeah, I just thought, who's this absolute nutbag?
Well, it is in her defence, I think it was Tamara, Tamara was the buyer. In her defence, like, I used to walk down that, you know, that's Cremorne Wharf, and Mark and I used to go walking there. And the houses are sort of perched so high up, and they are really, like, the road to get into them, really you kind of need a compass and a set square to try and work out where the actual entrance to the house was. But I suppose, you know, like, if you're the listing agent, you want to, and you've got a buyer that's got, you know, that sort of cash, you probably want to meet them somewhere where it's, you know, like, where they're able to, because also, like, the stairs on those properties, like, you have to be fit to actually get up those stairs. Like, people do those stairs to prepare for triathlons. So I did feel a bit sorry for Tamara in that episode.
The other technical lesson I liked out of this episode, going back to the Liam and Daniela thing, was seeing Delene out on the rake. She, again, is just that absolute example of not being too good to do anything. She kicks off the heels, gets on the rake, makes sure that everything's presentable before Simon and Liam get there to show the property. I think that's a true, I sound like a real raving Delene fan, and I'm no more Delene fan than anyone else, but I just like the fact that there's these lessons that up-and-coming agents or agents in general can take, that you're never too good to rake the leaves.
Yeah, she's the queen. Delene is the queen. All right, so let's talk at the final episode. So this is where everything kind of comes together, but, you know, but we are actually left. We thought loose ends were going to be tied up, but then they left us with a whole bunch of cliffhangers, which obviously they were planning season two, because, you know, if you're going to leave us with cliffhangers, it's like Dynasty. You know, you've got to expect that they're going to be resolved. So episode six, which is the last episode in the season, comes with a heap of cliffhangers. So we know that we're going to get a season two. But I think, you know, interestingly, so Tamara didn't like the house in Mossman because it was too grey. So Simon thinks, I know, I'm going to get this woman a castle, and calls his mate Michael Pallier, obviously. And, you know, we're taken back to, I think, Northbridge to Innisfail Castle, I think it is, which, by the way, is still on the market. Still hasn't been sold. But, you know, like, beautiful thing. I thought Carson from Downton Abbey would probably, you know, open the door and offer us tea. You know, but she's brought this mate of hers who is even weirder with the Tibetan singing bowl. Yeah. You know, like, is she, what's she got in the bowl? Is the energy any good? You know, like, and then I think they all go down to the dungeon, and then I think Liam gets a bit worried that he's going to get locked in there too. So I don't know. What did you think of that house?
Yeah, look, I mean, the house was incredible. The whole heritage overlay, I think, is the biggest problem in that there's very little you can do with it. And as much as it's a beautiful castle on the outside, it's pretty run down on the inside. It would take a lot of work and a lot of money to do something like that up. Palia offers the solution, I suppose, in that there's DA-approved plans for a really ultra-modern extension or wing of this place. Look, for me, that the juxtaposition of the old and new there just wouldn't work. I didn't think that the plans looked that great. Obviously, as you said, the place is still on the market now online, so Tamara's obviously not the buyer, even though her friend said that the energy in most of the place was quite good. Again, from a practical point of view, these things happen. In my career, we've had plenty of opportunities or plenty of instances where people have come with their healer friend to make sure that the energy in the house was on point. We've had people wanting early access to smudge the place with burning sage. I've had a couple of Asian buyers that have come through with experts in feng shui. So I think, yeah, it's odd. It's something that I don't really get, and a lot of people probably don't get, but I think that it's something that's not all that uncommon these days.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, again, I think you've got to, like, you've got to meet the vendor or the buyer where they're at, and, you know, like, let them do what they've got to do, and correct, let them walk away with a good experience, because all buyers are future sellers, right?
Yeah, correct, absolutely.
Interestingly, in this episode as well, like, I can remember, you know, interviewing someone a while ago about personal brands, and actually his name was Herman Chan. He was an agent in San Francisco, and he was a very out there character, and, you know, he said, not everyone is going to want to be my customer. But the people that I want to be my customers will be attracted to my brand. And I thought we really saw this play out between Kai and Oliver Lavers, who are both, you know, elite agents within Gavin's team, when Gavin set them a challenge to say, all right, whoever finds the buyer for this one's going to get an extra 50K. So interesting that he sort of, you know, like, ignited the competitive spirit between the two of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, I can remember Kai's style as being like, you know, let's get on with the deal and you know, giddy up, buy it now. And then, you know, then you had Oliver, who was quite soft with the family and talking to the kids and playing with, you know, and it's just really interesting to see, you know, I think as an agent, you've really got to play into who you are, because it can work for you, like, you know, with different vendors and different buyers.
Yeah, correct. And I think it would be really interesting to see if the tables were turned, how Kai would have dealt with the mother and the kids and how Ollie would have dealt with the straight shooting bloke, because I think that inherently Kai seems to be that straight shooter, that go, 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 that get the deal done kind of guy, where Ollie seems to be that softer approach. So it would be interesting to see just how much they can turn that around to suit the buyers and the sellers that they're dealing with. And look, I mean, they're absolute guns in their own right, so obviously they've got that down pat, but I think that was an interesting take on the differences between skill set, attitude, the way that they conduct themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And can I just say, you know, like, I think that there's probably a lot of people that would like to see a whole lot more Oliver Lavers in season two, because I don't think I'm the only one that thinks he looks a little Harvey Specter. So not that I've got a little crush on Ollie, but I think he's, you know, I think he's an unsung hero of the series.
I'm sure he'll like to hear that. I hope he's watching. Good on you, Ollie. Well, Daniela, Delene's assistant, it comes to the crunch for them to have their one-on-one meeting at the end of the probation period to decide whether Daniela stays or Daniela goes. And whilst Delaine points out that there's definitely some areas for improvement for her, and I think she does that in a really nice, respectful, constructive manner. Ultimately, Danielle is given the job, but it looks like she's not still there. We've done a little bit of searching, and her LinkedIn profile would suggest that she's back down in Wollongong, where I think she originates from. So perhaps Sydney just wasn't to her liking. I'm sure Gavin Rubenstein would say that another one bites the dust. He's had a bit of a dig at Delaine throughout the series about how many staff and assistants that she may have gone through throughout her long career. It looks like Danielle is not there. And speaking of the superstars that aren't there anymore, it also looks like our friend Liam is no longer there.
I know. He's, his Instagram said something about pursuing other opportunities, so he won't be in season two. But there was some hints, I think somebody did a story, I don't know whether it's Daily Mail, that he might be showing up on TV somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I think if you can pull off a party with, you know, everything from swans to waiters in pink budgie smugglers to pink penis straws to, you know, like all of the things that he did, like, you know, like I, when I come back in the next life, I want Liam organising my hen's party, basically. It was amazing. So then I guess the crescendo of the episode is the boat party, where we find out who's won the money.
Yeah, and nice guys don't finish last.
Yeah, from Gavin's team. And Gavin is talking about considering whether or not to expand his business, and the phone rings. And probably like what was a bit of a brain fade moment, like, you know, quick, hurry, wrap up filming because, you know, like COVID, we're all going to be locked down soon. Yeah. Gavin says it's Ray White, the big boss. But we know that it couldn't have been Ray White, right, because Ray White,
he's a couple of generations ago, I think, isn't he?
He's right? A couple of generations ago, yeah. So, and I did, so I thought, all right, well, who is it? Is it Brian? Is it Dan? Yeah. Is it Kyle Sandilands saying, hurry up? can you guys please wrap it up, you know, like, because we're about to get shut down? Or, you know, like, what was it? Who do you think it was?
I think it was probably Brian. I think we see a very quick snippet. I don't know if it's at the end of that season, whether they had a bit of a sneak peek of what was to come, or certainly in some of the trailers that have come out since, where it looks like a beautiful green lawn, probably somewhere on Wolseley Road in Point Piper, I would think, on the harbour, and it's Gavin and Brian sitting down. There may have been a third person. Maybe it was Dan as well. But I think, when Gav says that Ray White is calling, the Ray White, I think it's Ray White. It'd be interesting to see how that kicks off season two.
Yeah, absolutely. So the castle, so here's what we know about season two so far. So the cliffhangers, we had Dan White on the podcast recently, and I said, who was it? He was kind of being tight-lipped and just said, well, you know, like it could have been anyone really. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see the White family show up in some shape or form. The castle is still not sold. I think Simon's still unattached as far as I can tell. I've stalked his Instagram. But I still think we should mount that Batchy 2023 campaign, because I just do think that he and Osha would look really great together. And then the other big cliffhanger was Tammy was, trying to weigh up whether she would stay. Should she stay or should she go? Should she stay with Simon or join Queen Delaine? What are your thoughts?
I don't think she'll leave. I think that she's really found her groove with Simon. I think that they, from what we see on the show, they work really well together. I think Tammy is Simon's Donna from Suits, and I think that he would be really at a loss without her. And I think also she is such an ingrained family member of the Cohen Handler business that I don't think that there'd be enough of an attraction to go. Also, switching from being a buyer's agent or a buyer's agent's associate into a selling agent's role or a selling agent's associate, although there's some common themes, it's quite a different position to hold. So I think she'll stay. My money's on stay.
Yeah, this sounds like married at first sight, doesn't it? My money's on stay as well, because she's still on the Cohen Handler website.
Ah, well, there we go.
The thing with the news in real estate is it's really easy, you know, like you can Google them and they're everywhere. So the other thing too that I hope they pick up in season two is the commercial venture, Costi Cohen. So yeah. I thought that was, that was pretty interesting. And of course, I think with Costi Cohen, like Taz Costi is actually linked to Shania. I think they're engaged now. So this is the last of the Instagram stalkers I am, but
how incestuous the industry is and how very few degrees of separation there is between anyone and anyone within the industry, particularly in Sydney and particularly in the eastern suburbs of Sydney. I think we also, and we'll talk about what we can expect from season two in a tick, but there's also a link between Simon and the newest member of the main cast, who is the absolutely fabulous Monica Tu.
Monica Tu, yeah.
With Tim Zhu, it's Tim, isn't it, the boxer? His mum was an agent for Black Diamonds for a number of years and is now a buyer's agent associate with Simon. So there's links everywhere. I mean, and that is typical of real estate in Australia.
So there's a lesson there too, actually, that you just got to keep it tidy and keep it dignified and everything, like no matter where you go, and sort of try and remain on good terms with everybody that you meet.
100%.
So we've seen the trailer for season two. What do you reckon is coming up based on the trailer? There's a lot of rap music again.
Yeah, look, it's a rap lover's paradise, Lux Listing season one, and I think season two is probably going to be no different. I quite like it. It's quite good. I'm really excited to see what Monica brings to the show. I think that she is a real rags-to-riches story, and I love her story. I've seen her speak. I've never met her personally, but she seems hilarious outside of the professional persona that she has. So I'm really excited to see what Monica brings. I think it's going to add that extra layer. And you mentioned before that there's rumours that we see a bit more over the bridge action in season two. And that doesn't surprise me at all, because Monica's working with sort of the elite of Chinese investors in Australia. And a lot of them are in those North Shore, upper North Shore suburbs, even out to the inner west. I know that she sells a lot out there. It'll be interesting to see how the dynamic changes a little with Monica being brought in. Does Queen Delene feel some threat there? She's still Queen Delene in my eyes, but she's no longer the sole princess. Yeah, let's see. Let's see how they handle that.
Yeah, well, I love Monica too. I'm a big Monica. You can't have too much Monica too, I reckon. We've met her a few times, and she reminds me a bit of a Lucy Liu. You know, she's just like this superhero that sort of walks in with furs and hair and stilettos. And I can remember meeting her at ARIC a couple of years ago, just before we interviewed her, and she was wearing these amazing shoes. I think they were Louboutins with the spiky things on them. And I said, "Oh, Monica, I love your shoes." And she said, and I said that the spikes are amazing. And she said, yes, they're really good for kicking butts. So, and there's plenty of butts to kick, I reckon, in the eastern suburbs. So I can't wait to see what she does.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other telltale that Tammy and Simon are still working together is that I think we've seen a little bit of the snippet, a very quick snippet. You've got to be a little bit eagle-eyed, but them together, working together in the next season. So I'm happy to see that. And Australia's golden girl, the Delpha Goodrum, perhaps a buyer's agent client of Simon's, it seems.
Well, I can't wait to see, because I'm a fan of Delta. Like, you know, I don't care what anyone says about her. I love her. And it was like lovely to see her show up. And I think, the snippet I saw was, she was taller than Simon too. So she must be very, very tall in real life, but I can't wait to see whether it's, it could be a performance on a boat. Who knows? Who knows? Anyway.
I can't wait to find out is the main thing.
I know, and thankfully we don't have long to wait. Okay, folks, well, that's a wrap on season one. Dave, thank you so much for taking that that journey back through Lux Listings. I mean, I certainly enjoyed the series, and I know you did too, and I actually had heaps of fun reliving it just now.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
So Lux Listings Season 2 drops on Friday, the 1st of April. You're going to get three episodes at once. That's 1, 2, and 3. And Dave and I will be back on Saturday to give you our thoughts and takeaways and things like that on those episodes. And then we'll see you again once a week on a Saturday with the same things. And we can't wait to talk about all things Lux. Dave, thank you once again. Big love and thanks to Issue.com for sponsoring the series. And we will see you all again soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast. Don't forget to get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast. Visit joineliteagent.com.